This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Numbers too big to ignore. Why don't you talk to me?
Good evening, my name's Sue and you're listening to Hear Me Roar, Joy's all-female current affairs and topic program. Co-hosting with me tonight are Kathy and Leanne.
Good evening.
Good evening, how are we?
Are we good?
We're good, apart from my back, but we won't go
there. You've done your back, haven't you?
Done my back, Jack.
Tell us how you did it, go on.
Is it a good story? Is it like one of those raunchy, you know,
I was reaching for the baby oil. I was putting my sandwich in the fridge at work. That's what I did.
Oh, so is it always the way when you do something monstrous to yourself like that? And it's never a particularly exciting story. No. But thanks for sharing.
Should have gone for the top shelf lunch, but I went for the bottom shelf lunch.
Oh, good old OH&S conversation in that one. Later on this hour, we're going to be talking about eating disorders. We're going to be talking to Dr. Naomi Crafty, and she's a counselling psychologist and the education officer at Eating Disorders Victoria, and also to Samantha, who has recovered from an eating disorder and is a volunteer there. So we'd like to hear your opinion about this subject. So if you can call, email or text, we'd be really interested. 9699 2949, 0427 joy 949, or you can email on air at joy.org.au. Kathy, what is going on?
Oh, look, there's plenty in the news this week. Plenty to entice everybody. First up, we can all put the veils and tuxedos away for a while, ladies, because despite massive crowds at the National Day of Action, the ALP is refusing to budge on its opposition to gay marriage or civil unions. The Federal Attorney General, Robert McClellan, cited the Constitution to justify the government's continuing same-sex marriage ban. He said, "We acknowledge and commit to the definition of a marriage that is defined in the Marriage Act as being between a man and a woman. And indeed, that definition, I believe, is certainly consistent with the provision of the Australian Constitution. However, members of the Rainbow Labor Group within the party reckon it could be back on the agenda by 2012. But in the studio here, we're not holding our breaths.
2012?
Time away, isn't it?
It is. This has all come around at the time this morning, coincidentally. The two pro-marriage, gay marriage protesters were thrown out of a breakfast organised by, get this, the Australian Christian Lobby and the Australian Family Association to commemorate the 5th anniversary of the Howard government's ban on same-sex marriage in 2004. And ladies, can you believe they actually held a breakfast for this ridiculous legislation? That.
I cannot believe it. I was absolutely appalled. I did not know this was on, because if I'd known this was on,
you would have gone and gate crashed it.
Absolutely. I would have been there saying, what the heck, can you pass me a scone and a little bit of decency, thank you.
No jam and cream for me. You know, I don't know how well whether we should be surprised or not that the conference didn't uptake, you know, any sort of undertake anything to do with same-sex marriage, or even rather than a, you know, consideration to say, oh yeah, well, okay, well maybe we'll look into it into the future.
What worries me is that the Federal Attorney General sounding like John Howard.
Well, this is the thing. They are trying to appease their Conservative members, and we know that Kevin Rudd hasn't come to the party on it, and it's unlikely to. But we know that we need a national scheme for this. It can't be a state-based thing. It's like you can register your relationship in Victoria, but you're not recognised in any other state. It needs to be a national thing, and that's why there was such a push to make it a national issue. But
and that's why it worked so well, even though they haven't supported this and made the legislative changes. It's really unified the gay, lesbian community in making some greater standpoints. But I just cannot accept the fact that they had a breakfast to celebrate it.
No. I mean, how organised that? Like, they've been saying, oh, 5 years, yay!
We've held those lesos off long enough.
What a boring life they must lead.
I don't know what else. Clearly they're sick of celebrating the usual religious holidays and other things that, you know.
They're going to put this on the calendar, aren't they?
Well, I hope so. I really want to see this on a calendar. Christmas, you know, Anzac Day, Anti-Leso Day.
I wonder if they sent cards to each other, you know, like a celebration. Happy, you know, pro-marriage between a man and a woman day.
I think so. Adam and Eve Day.
Oh, nice.
Oh, I like that idea.
Not Adam and Adam, certainly not Evelyn.
Yeah, Adam and Steve.
Talking about Adam and Adam and Steve and Steve, who's on the hot list for the top 20 list?
Wow.
Apart from us, you met.
Apart from all the crew at Hear Me Roar.
Yeah.
There has been an online poll, Cherry Magazine commissioned. 2,600 lesbians worldwide participated. And, drum roll please. Number one of the most... lesbian icon, top number one is Angelina Jolie.
No surprise.
Lips.
She has got gorgeous lips, hasn't she?
Oh, she's got an amazing figure.
Oh,
I was looking at photos of her pregnant the other day. She's even beautiful. Most women are beautiful when they're pregnant, but I mean, she's just an absolute glamour. You could put her in a sack, a bag on her head, and she'd still be beautiful.
But she's not. It's not just about. But that would not be okay. But if I've lost my point now thinking about Angelina Jolie.
Well, Angelina.
In the sack, I think.
Yeah. Well, she's very open about her having lesbian relationships in the past. That's Jenny Shimizu was the most obvious and famous one, I suppose. Right. She was out here for the Queer Film Festival a few years ago. But she is, I think the whole point of the poll was for, our icons, people we'd most like to aspire to. And obviously it's not Brad Pitt that we're after or that we envy in her lifestyle. Maybe the 60 children that they've managed to procure.
Yes, but I mean, that sort of brings them down a couple of gold stars.
Exactly. So who else is on the list?
Well, Madonna's in number two. Pink is in third spot.
Oh, yeah.
Martina Navratilova is fourth. And Ellen DeGeneres rounds out the top five.
I think Ellen should be higher.
Yeah.
I like Ellen.
I'm surprised that Pink wasn't higher. But there you go. Madonna's in there. Beyonce made the list, as did Gwen Stefani. Britney Spears, Sarah Jessica Parker, that's an unusual one.
Mm. Yeah, the most interesting, Leanne and I were having a bit of a chit-chat before, is number 20.
Hey. Does anyone want to do a song?
Dolly Parton.
Islands in the Stream, Dolly.
That's what we are.
Yeah. I thought Islands in the Stream were her, sort of. Yeah. That's
Dolly. That's Dolly in the bath.
See, Jermaine Greer's on the list.
She is.
Yeah, she is.
Mm.
She's never been pro-lesbian at all, though, the old Jermaine. I mean, I love her, but she's sort of...
She's
never really sort of even...
She's a bit scary at times.
No, Jermaine doesn't really like many people though, does she?
No, true. I don't think it's a gender thing. It's a sexuality thing. Basically a human thing, isn't it?
Well, Penny Wong's not on there. Like, no, there's no politicians. Natasha Stott Despoja, she'd be on my list.
Look, it does come down to a lot to people in the music industry or movie industry, doesn't it, really? Mm. It's not power women. Mm.
Depends who these 2,600 lesbians were.
Well, it was... We three, and we just kept voting.
Well, Martina is also in the news. It is in a spot of legal bother with her ex-missus.
Another
ex-missus. This is true, the second time. She's being sued by Tony Layton, her life partner for the last 8 years. Probably not life partner forever, just partner for 8 years. Sounds funny, doesn't it? Tony claims she was forcibly removed from one of the four multi-million-dollar properties that the two shared. She's saying, Martina's got a fight on her hands. I was kicked out on the street with only the clothes on my back. And apparently this is the second time Martina's been sued by an ex-lover. In 1991, Judy Nelson also claimed she'd been abandoned by Navratilova. And Nelson was, they settled out of court for US $3 million.
Which was a lot in those days.
In 91, yeah.
Yeah. It's probably worth... $2 million.
Yeah, these days it's pocket change. You can buy, half a house in Malibu for that.
I'm just thinking how fantastic would it be to say, look, the relationship's over, which is obviously a bad thing, but here's a cool $3 million. Be nice, wouldn't it, to end up that instead of, look, let's decide over who gets the fridge.
Or the dogs.
Exactly. Or the dogs.
Yeah.
Well, Martina's got thousands of dogs. I think she hangs on to them, though, doesn't she?
Oh, yeah. Well, they're her life partners.
I think you're right there.
Well,
my ex-partner at the time we were together bought me the book about Martina and Judy Nelson. I wonder if it was a hint that I didn't sort of take.
Did she ask you for alimony when you broke up? Or maintenance?
She got the house. Here. And the dog, actually. Hang on.
Funny. So she's not in your top 20 list of iconic
lesbians. Well, no, but I was just thinking the present before the book was she actually bought me some luggage. It's true. I'm really... All these years later, I'm starting to piece it together.
Yes, it's all starting to come together, isn't it? Now, staying with the entertainment news, the big news of the celebrity news of the week is, does she or doesn't she? The question on everyone's lips is, does singer Lady Gaga have a penis?
The answer is, I think so.
There you go.
I had a look at the YouTube clip.
I don't want to see.
My mother would say, I wouldn't let a little thing like that worry me.
Well, for those of our listeners who haven't seen it, or I don't know if you haven't heard about it, she was filmed sliding off a Vespa scooter on stage at the Glastonbury Festival. She had a skin-tight miniskirt on, and when she slid off, you could see a strange object appearing to dangle between her legs. Now, her manager denies that she is a hermaphrodite, but quotes have been floating around the internet, apparently from Gaga, but they've come from an unknown source, which is slightly dodgy. But the quotes say, this is apparently Lady Gaga saying, it's just a little bit of a penis.
I love that. It's a little bit of a penis.
Is that like a little bit pregnant?
Yes. I'm a little bit pregnant. But look,
I'm a little bit of a boy.
She would be a great public figure, though, for intersex, wouldn't she?
Oh.
You know, if she can come out and say yes, well, she has actually now, I guess, come out and said that this is the case. Oh, that's fantastic. Mm. Because then we don't have to, as long as the general media don't hold on to that and make fun of her, I think.
Well, the problem now is that she could be forever known as Lady Gaga singer or Lady Gaga hermaphrodite.
Yeah.
Well, hermaphrodite is a really outdated kind of term as well. We're having a discussion about this off air. The correct term is now intersex. And I mentioned that to a few people at work the other day and they sort of went, oh, right. And we kind of forget that. Yeah. You know, intersex isn't really a
term that's used for it that widely.
It's not sort of, you know, got into the mainstream vernacular, I suppose, but it would be if she just came out and said, yeah, well, you know what, I've got both and so what?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Right. What do you reckon?
Yeah. That's right.
Well, she's going to be on Idol on Sunday night, so maybe we should look out and see whether she does any tricks. Puppetry of the penis.
You're listening to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9 and we'll be back shortly.
Good evening. My name's Sue. You're listening to Hear Me Roar, Joy's Little Female Current Affairs program. Tonight in the studio with me, we have Leanne and Kathy. And we also have Sam and Nadia. Oh, my.
Naomi.
She's going to hit me now. Naomi is going to hit me because I put her name aside. We're talking eating disorders tonight. Now, Naomi, you're a counselling psychologist and education officer at Eating Disorders Victoria. Can you just tell us a bit more about Eating Disorders Victoria, what they do?
Mm, yeah, Eating Disorders Victoria started over 20 years ago, and we're a community-based organisation. We support people with eating disorders in the community and also family and friends and people who are concerned about people who either have or perhaps might be at risk of developing eating disorders, and we help link those people in with professional help as much as possible.
Do eating disorders discriminate? Men, women, young, old?
Absolutely no discrimination with eating disorders, so people from all demographics. We have people as young as 6 or 7 who have been diagnosed with eating disorders. People can develop eating disorders in their 40s, 50s and 60s, and men, women, people from all different backgrounds.
Okay, well, Sam, you've actually lived through the experience of an eating disorder, and we'd really like to understand more of your story. Can you tell us when, I guess, whether there was a pinpoint start to that?
That's a bit hard to define because I think the starts and the ends can be a little bit blurry, but I can sort of look back and think that in my sort of middle teenage years, when I was about 15, it was when I started feeling a little bit sadder. And if I look back now, I think that was sort of an episode of depression. And then what happened after that over the next couple of years was me trying to cope with that sadness. And one response that I had, and somehow the equation came into my head that I felt unattractive and therefore that was causing my sadness. So I thought, well, if I looked a bit more attractive and therefore if I lost some weight, I thought it was overweight and unattractive, that would equal happiness and I would be happier.
Sam, how much did you weigh when you started this feeling like this? Did you consider yourself an overweight person? That's probably a trick question, isn't it? Were you an overweight person in terms of, you know, your regular sort of BMI index and all that kind of stuff?
I'm not sure. I remember the feelings of being overweight, and I guess that is a funny one because the idea of normal, it can be so different, especially when you're a young person and it depends on who you're surrounded by. But it's more the comparison that you kind of look at different images and you don't realize at that time what you're being influenced by. But if I look back now, there were lots of influences that there were, you know, in the media and things like that. There are images of what prettiness is and that often equals thinness and the equal, you know, the story that's happiness and, you know, success. So I guess those were subtle messages that I was receiving as a teenager.
Okay.
Naomi, is that a common thread that you hear, that kind of essence of story?
Very common, and I think it's important to mention too that eating disorders certainly don't discriminate in terms of body size. So people from all different shapes and sizes can develop eating disorders.
Oh, okay.
And interestingly, of course, people who have average BMI or BMI below average are just as interested in losing weight and just as affected by media images as people who are overweight or obese.
That's a really interesting point, actually, because the common misconception from what you're saying is that it's only people who are overweight that would think they have a problem and so therefore start on this process of having a poor self-esteem and being more susceptible to having an eating disorder.
Yeah, no, that's certainly not true, and I think it's actually very sad that statistics show that about 75% of normal weight adult women are dissatisfied with their body size.
75%?
That's right, and spending an awful lot of time worrying about it and as Sam mentioned, being depressed and having it affect their quality of life.
If 75% of women, as you're saying, 75% of women are affected by this, but then there's that small minority that go to that next level and it becomes a significant issue in their lives.
Mm. Well, certainly there's a continuum of issues. So I think for many people it's a significant issue. If you're talking about a diagnosed mental health problem, then you're talking about a significant minority, not necessarily a small minority. So there are estimates that up to 20% of people in the population, particularly women, will have some sort of an eating disorder, whether it's binge eating disorder or bulimia nervosa or anorexia.
Now, I read a story that Sam wrote. It was a speech that you gave at one point. And I'm interested to know, you said that it started as something from teenage years. And maybe this is a question first to Naomi. You said before there's no age limit for this type of thing, but is it more common for people going through adolescence when they're becoming or going through so many changes anyway? You've got peer pressure at school, those kinds of pressures. Is it more common for people at Sam's age when she first started to feel depressed?
It's certainly quite common that that's when we pick up people with eating disorders and at risk for developing eating disorders. Mm. But as I said, it can develop at any age. So certainly there are people who have normal eating behaviours and body image issues and can develop eating disorders in their 20s, 30s or later on. But it is quite common, relatively common at that age.
Okay.
Sam, in your story that you wrote, you talked about how isolated you felt at high school. Mm. And there was a moment where a teacher actually approached you and noticed that there was an issue. Could you just go into that for us, please?
Sure. I think that was even before the eating disorder sort of developed fully, but they noticed sort of the changes in me that I wasn't performing very well at school and I was withdrawn and I was isolating myself more. And, and a counsellor came up to me and wanted to talk about what was happening. But unfortunately, that didn't proceed further on and I wish I'd got more support at that stage.
She was called away, is that right?
That was right.
And then you kept waiting for that moment where she would come back again.
Yeah. And that's the hard thing because you don't know how to ask for help. And for the years that I experienced an eating disorder, for the 6 to 8 years after that, you're conflicted about asking for help. You know something's wrong and you're not happy where you are, but you think that you've got the solution and therefore, you know, if I lose weight, I'll be happy and then life will be okay. But you also know that you're being more destructive to your body. So it's this real conflict about, do I get help? Do I have a problem to get help about? You know, I don't look like the stereotypical images of the, you know, the anorexic that's often showed, you know, on mainstream TV. So then you start thinking, well, maybe I haven't really got a problem. It's just in my head and I'll solve it and I'll get on with it. But there's a conflict because other people know that you're not doing very well. You know you're not doing very well, but sometimes people don't know what to say and how to offer help.
And keep going. Let's go into a bit of detail. Now, let's look at anorexia nervosa. Can you tell us a bit more, Naomi, about that condition?
Anorexia nervosa is usually characterised by being severely underweight, so somebody who has a BMI below 18 or 17.5. And they're usually someone who's restricting their intake to very small amounts of food. They judge themselves almost entirely based on their weight and shape. And there's a perceptual distortion that occurs with anorexia nervosa so that no matter how thin they get, they still consider that they're fat. In fact, quite ironically, the thinner they get, the fatter they appear to be to themselves.
And that comes across in the media presentations. They did the computer programs and they sort of...
Yeah, I mean, how many stories do we see in trash mags like NW of, you know, stars too thin, stars too fat, that type of thing that surely... And you know, Mary-Kate Olsen and, you know, those kinds of people who look like they're definitely have some sort of eating disorder, or you know, people would probably say, why don't they start eating? That's something that people said to you though too, wasn't it, Sam? Well, why don't you, you should eat more, and why don't you put on weight and that type of thing? That must have been a lot of pressure.
It is, because that's one solution that's offered to you when actually what you're feeling is just not very good about yourself. And you know, the eating disorder is often a symptom of what's going on for the person. And for me, definitely was a symptom of not feeling very good about myself. So giving me a solution to the symptom rather than a solution to the problem wasn't very helpful at that time. And what I needed was somebody to talk about how you're going and how you're feeling, and developing other ways of coping with the sadness, or, you know, and addressing that.
Right, rather than going to McDonald's and just forking out for a Happy Meal.
That's right.
It's really interesting. Let's go into bulimia nervosa. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
So bulimia nervosa differs from anorexia nervosa because a person is binging and purging. So it's the body's natural response to restricting food intake to get excessively hungry. I mean, we all do that. It keeps us alive. And so for people who are restricting their food intake, as in anorexia nervosa, they do that in bulimia as well. Their response is to get excessively hungry, and the end result of that is often to binge eat, and people feel so bad about the fact that they've eaten too much food that they make themselves purge in some way. And purging can be a whole range of things, but it also includes excessive exercise and fasting. So somebody who sort of goes through that cycle of waking up in the morning, not eating breakfast, not eating lunch, coming home from work, binging all evening, and then waking up the next day and fasting again, might well meet the criteria for bulimia nervosa.
So gym junkies could be...
Absolutely. And that's an increasing problem, actually, at the moment. We're seeing more people with excessive exercise addiction. So,
oh, really?
That's interesting. Sam, do people often think that you were mad or crazy or just, you know, just a little bit off centre?
I'm sure they did. luckily, not many people told me that to my face, but I'm sure they thought it. I'm sure I saw that look in their eyes. And I guess you're just distracted a lot of the time because you're constantly fighting this battle inside. And it's interesting what you were saying about anorexia and bulimia. Often, you know, it's sometimes I think of it on a spectrum, like you're going from different forms of behaviour, and it takes so much energy to maintain that battle inside between, I guess, your physical body and your mental state that wants to be healthy. Your natural state sort of wants to be okay, and your body needs food and needs nourishment, but you're fighting it, so you're often distracted, and then you probably can't pay attention, you lose focus, you can't concentrate on things, and therefore a whole range of things suffer, like your relationships and your performances at work and school, and there's a whole domino effect that happens.
Sam, did you realise that you were doing damage to your body when you were going through all of this process, or was it just so debilitating that mentally you just couldn't think of that?
Yeah, I'm not sure whether I realised it. I think maybe in the back of my mind, I knew that it didn't make sense. But somehow I thought, you know, I'm different. One, you think, oh, well, it's not that much of a problem. Like, I don't look like those girls on the TV, so I'm not that bad. And it'll be okay because I'm going to get to my goal weight and then everything's going to be okay after that. And you don't seek out that information about what type of damage you're doing to your body. So it wasn't until I started hearing those messages consistently from people around me that did get support and got some good advice about how to approach me. And talking about some of the risks, I couldn't deny them when they kept telling me, you know, actually, the longer you go with this, the longer the damage that's done. So those consistent and clear messages to me were actually very helpful.
And what sort of things did people pick up on? Because we haven't really specified if you were diagnosed with anorexia or bulimia. We'll probably answer that in a second. But were people worried about your weight? Were you looking particularly thin? Or was it your behaviour in terms of your eating?
It went through various stages over the years. There's quite a few, I mean, I had an eating disorder for more than 8 years. So it went through a lot of stages. And I said, it's like a spectrum. So it went from, you know, very restrictive eating to the binging and purging stuff. So, so I looked different during those times, and my behaviours were different at those different times. But I guess the consistent thing was that there was this complete struggle, and people knew there was this struggle. I was unhappy, like I was distracted and distressed and unhappy, and there'd be this constant fight around food and how I looked. So that was something that was very noticeable, that I couldn't participate in, you know, the usual activities that people participate in, like, you know, going out for dinner and, you know, social occasions where there's lots of food around. I would avoid them. And as a result, you become more isolated and withdraw yourself from others, like family and friends situations. So people notice that you're not there.
Oh, it must be incredible to go through. Naomi, what is the research that they're finding on eating disorders at the moment? Are they finding that it is a high relationship to dieting? Is it getting any better? Are the numbers reducing, getting higher?
I change my opinion on that almost daily. So there are some days that I'm really optimistic that we've turned the corner and that people are finally recognising some of these issues. And there are some things happening out there in the community, I think, that really indicate that, that there's some increased understanding about body image concerns, about the damage that eating disorders cause people, and that young people in particular are becoming better educated about some of the risk factors and the problems of dieting, etc. So they're my good days. On bad days, you know, we hear about increased numbers of people being diagnosed with eating disorders, certainly about large numbers of women with body image concerns, and you know, the fact that we still don't have treatments that are 100% effective in dealing with these problems.
Mm. Sam, you said that you didn't know how to enjoy food and you actually got to the point where you didn't know how to eat. Mm. How was that emotionally for you? That's really abstract for most people.
And I look back now and it's abstract for me now because I can't, it's hard to relate to that person that felt like that. But yeah, you over years, you slowly, it's almost like you associate food as the enemy in a way, because you think, well, food's going to equal putting on weight. So therefore you try not to like it very much, but it is a battle because you do need food. So it's a huge struggle.
Did you sort of stop eating a lot of, obviously I'm assuming you would have stopped eating a lot of fatty foods and sugary foods, but did you have things that were basic? Like, would you just say, right, I'm only allowed to have, you know, an apple today, or I'm only allowed to have this or that? Is that kind of how you manage things?
I think I went through lots of stages. Yeah. I went through whole stages where I'd get very fixated. I think the idea of fixation that you're talking about, mm-hmm. that's quite common, that sometimes you get fixated on something and you think, well, this routine's going to work and it's going to equal, you know, I'm going to get to my goal weight. And then it doesn't work. So you try something else and then you're constantly trying different things. So, you know, come out of it and kind of go, I've tried everything. And that actually contributes to the exhaustion after a while, and you kind of go, everything I'm trying is not working. Oh, so what am I going to do?
Sounds like you ran yourself into the ground there.
Yeah, it felt like that. It feels like that.
It would. And in a minute, we'll get into the recovery process. So let's go through a couple of myths, the true or falses. Now, the myth is eating disorders only affect teenage girls. We've kind of answered that one already, haven't we?
We have, and that's certainly not true.
It's not true at all. Let's try this one. People with eating disorders are just seeking attention.
Quite the opposite. People with eating disorders tend to have very low self-esteem, feel badly about themselves, and they're really just trying to disappear. So most people with eating disorders hide in sort of oversized clothing and are quiet and insignificant, don't draw attention to themselves in any way. But of course, just by virtue of the way they look, they're going. Certain people with restrictive eating disorders are going to draw attention to themselves in some way.
Sam's nodding ferociously in the corner over there.
She's getting it. Here we go, another one. Only skinny people have eating disorders.
We've sort of covered that one already. Mm. All shapes and sizes.
Eating disorders are primarily about weight control or food. Sam?
I would disagree with that. I think it is about the emotional stuff underneath that's causing you not to feel very good about yourself and wanting to make yourself feel a bit better.
Okay, and the last one, it's just a phase or fad and they'll get over it.
Well, I think that's a sort of very potentially very dangerous attitude that some people take about eating disorders. And I think Sam mentioned that when she said her counsellor at school sort of forgot about the problem and went away and probably thought, oh, well, Sam will just get better. And many, many years later, of course, she wasn't. And so it's really important if we identify people that are at risk for developing eating disorders that we keep trying to do something about it. Don't just sort of, you know, hide our heads in the sand and think that it will just go away, because it won't.
Absolutely. Sam, let's go into your recovery. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about what that process was like for you and how it began?
Yep. It began, thankfully for me, that there was an organisation like the Eating Disorders Foundation that was around at the time. So members of my family and friends network sort of were getting more and more concerned and called them up and said, you know, how can we support me? And so they started going to the family and friends support groups and getting information and skills to be able to talk to me and approach it with me. And then they started telling me that I perhaps should go to a support group if I wasn't going to do anything else about it. They were encouraging me to get other sorts of help, but I was denying it. And they kept on and on and on, and until I, just to get the pressure off my back, and I didn't want to have another conversation about it, I said, okay, deal, I'm going to go to this support group. And from the moment I walked into my first support group, I think that was when my recovery began, and it continued up upwards ever since.
And this recovery group was Eating Disorders Victoria.
Victoria, yep. They run recovery support groups for people experiencing and recovering from eating disorders.
Naomi, what are the contact details for Eating Disorders Victoria?
Well, Eating Disorders Victoria has a helpline, and the number is 1300 550 236, and the helpline operates 9 to 5 Monday to Friday. You can also send us an email at help@eatingdisorders.org.au, and a good place to start to get information is to look at our website, which is probably one of the most extensive websites about eating disorders in the world, I think. And the address for that is www.eatingdisorders.org.au.
Sam, I was going to say, at the beginning of your recovery process, you kind of gave in to pressure.
Mm.
That must have been really hard to kind of just... Was it really just a capitulation? Because I know in your speech, that you, the story that you wrote, yeah. you said you actually fainted at a concert. Like, you just... You know, and through the recovery process, now you can do all that kind of stuff. But in the beginning, was it just... Was it really hard to kind of admit that something was wrong?
Yeah, one part of me knew that there was something very significantly wrong, but I didn't know how to get help and what that help could involve. It was really conflicted, and it's hard to figure out what I was thinking at that stage.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to let go of my goal. The other thing was that I thought I had the answer, and that was if I just lose some weight, then it's all going to be okay. And other people were saying, no, you've got to get some help because it's a problem. So I'm going to go, no, I know the answer. So giving into that fight was difficult. Yeah, you're right about that. But there was more and more evidence that I wasn't doing very well, and it was actually, you know, what other people were saying was true. I was getting more and more physically and mentally unwell. So that wore me down, and the fight wore me down as well, but also the attention. I mean, keeping it on the agenda, I think, is really important for family and friends to, you know, in the appropriate way, not in this confronting and demanding way, but in an appropriate way that opens up the person to saying, okay, I might try something.
Yeah.
And so that was clear and consistent messages that opened me up to change were really important, and that helped.
And it's just interesting to note that about 60% of the calls to Eating Disorders Victoria come from families and friends and people who are concerned about other people at risk. So it's very important that people know that they can ring to get information and not necessarily leave it to the person who has an eating disorder.
We have to round it up now, Sam. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you'd like to say to a listener out there?
I guess I would encourage, if there's a family member or friend who thinks somebody is experiencing this, to talk about it, to call the Eating Disorders Foundation and just get some advice on, you know, how to approach it. And not let it slip off the agenda, because it's easy to try and forget it because it's too hard. But, you know, the longer it gets left, the longer the person experiences it.
Naomi?
And I'd just like to join your call to celebrate diversity, because I know that's a strong message of yours here, and it's certainly at Eating Disorders Victoria, that's the message we're trying to get across, that people come in all shapes and sizes and we should celebrate that.
That is true. It's even more pointed for you guys, all shapes and sizes too, isn't it?
That's right.
Obviously.
You do a fantastic job. So once again, Eating Disorders Victoria, the helpline is 1300 550 236. If you would like to email us, you can email us on air at joy.org.au. But if at other times during the week you think, oh, really, we don't catch up with the girls, you can also contact us on hearmeroar@joy.org.au, because we really do want your input. If you have something you would like us to discuss, or a topic that you think is really pertinent to our community, absolutely let us know. We want to say hello to our regular listeners, and a big raw hi to Matt, who tunes in each week.
Oh, we love boys on the show, boy listeners. I've got all my girlfriends listening to all of them. We have to do a relationship show, I mean, polygamist. No, they're listening to the show all the time, which is good. Like, yeah, we get a lot of response. We get a lot of positive feedback from people. I think we're doing well.
We are doing well, and we are very inclusive, male, female, yellow, green, orange, fat, thin, small, tall, doesn't matter.
GLBTIQQLRT. It is an interesting question with this show, because we have been doing, I mean, we are all women running this current affairs stuff. We're covering a lot of ground, but there's got to be particular issues. And people who have maybe listened to us for the first time, with the format is we do the current affairs, we're talking about new stuff that's coming up and things that have happened during the week, and then we have this interview-based, back end of the show, which is sort of a single topic. So far, we've done transgender issues.
Breast cancer.
Tonight we did the eating disorders. Mostly topics concerning women, but also affecting men.
Absolutely. Well. We've had the glows in. We've had a lesbian walk, a timeline. That was great with Graham.
Yep, top moments Willett's in lesbian history with Graham Willett.
And we are up and coming. That's me.
Up and coming. We're all up and coming.
No, in future shows, we're going to look at pets, the relationships pets are in our relationships, finances, women's finances. Mm. We're going to tackle grief, but not the sad, necessarily the sad part, but celebrating life and how people celebrate life after loss. Cross-dressing, which is going to be a really interesting one, and polygamy is also coming up in the next few weeks.
Look, relationships is something that everybody can have a crack at, really, isn't it? In terms
we'll
of
try.
How different are our relationships to other, you know, other people's and
gay men,
straight
couples?
That was some of the
arguments that some people I know in the community were against same-sex marriage, saying that they actually don't have a traditional relationship with two people. So, you know, this sort of fight for same-sex marriage sort of assumes
that we want the same thing,
the same sort of relationships.
Mm. It's interesting. Yeah, we're just in our early starts of trying to work out all that. I was reading an article the other day that's saying that men seem to be so, well, the gay men seem to be so much further on in the fact that they don't necessarily just have the one-on-one relationships, whereas more commonly women have the one-on-one.
Yeah, open relationships with lesbians tend not to be a popular
thing.
Form. No, they don't. But interestingly, I've had a few friends of friends who have recently decided to embark upon the open relationship arena, and it's a really tricky minefield. You've either got to be very secretive about it, or you've got to be completely open, which opens all sorts of issues.
A Pandora's box, one could say.
Oh
Leanne,
we've got to get the word
puns.
Box in every show. It's awesome. I love it,
Leanne. I also want to let people know now. This is one that touches my heart. There's a high school meeting in Coburg, and there's a question and answer forum and panel evening on Wednesday, the 19th of August at 6:30. Catherine Devaney is going to be on the panel.
Oh.
Bless her. Got to ring her and see if she'll come on our show. If you're listening, Catherine, come on our show. And Rod contacts QCing because there's basically a real lack of high schools and secondary schools in that area. So they're doing a bit of a promotion. So if you can get down to the Coburg Town Hall Wednesday, the 19th of August at 6:30, it would be really appreciated. And as a community, as women, let's get out there and support these things for our kids ahead.
I don't have children. I just have a dog. So look, I'm going to be well prepared for the pet show. He's a bit autistic, my dog. Actually, he's
Why?
Very special. He's scared of coughing.
coughing.
Yeah, scared of coughing, scared of tents. And if you cough in a tent, it's all over. Oh, it's a disaster. Yeah, we've got, you know, he has to sleep in the car, shaking in the fetal position, rocking back and forth.
Poor God. Darling, what happened to him?
He's medicated now, so we're all right.
He's in a happy place.
Yeah, he's the happy pills. Yeah, he loves them.
Well, Dr. Cookie from the Lost Dogs Home, she'll be coming in for that show, and she's actually going to be answering questions. So you might like to ask that one.
Oh, so many people adopt pets these days, because the Lost Dogs Home has an adopt a pet program, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yes, they do.
Yes,
they're very RSPCA as well. Save a dog. Heap of them. In fact, we have a puppy, she's 20 months old now, and we think she may need a friend. So often I'll go to the websites and look and see who's up for grabs.
Yep.
And when my partner comes in, she says, "Are you trawling for puppy porn again?"
Puppy porn, that's a bit sad, darling.
Because I always go, "Look at this one, it's so cute. Oh, look at this one, it's so cute."
I think your partner's pacing at the front there.
Yeah.
Are you Twittered?
Look, I have to. I'm being forced into the world of Twitter for my day job, but I don't particularly love it. I'm on Facebook. I'm a little bit of more of a private person. I'm very choosy about who is my friend on Facebook. I was having a conversation with another colleague tonight about how there's a particular media organisation in Melbourne that's going to be logging into Twitter and Facebook, and they'll be able to basically see all your details, what your interests are and all that kind of thing, so they can target advertising towards you. So I'm a little bit big brotherish about Twitter.
I don't know that I just want to sort of send messages to people like, "I'm going to the toilet now." Is that all you sort of do?
Yep.
I don't know. I'm not that interested.
No, I'm not either.
There's an argument that celebrities are now losing their celebrity status because they're just normal people. They eat salmon sandwiches, and they, you know, they walk their dogs, and they, you know, and they brush their teeth with Colgate.
Gone.
It is, yeah. The magic curtain's been pulled back, and we've, you know, revealed to see to see how boring they really are.
I don't want to know everything. I get enough SMSs and stuff. I don't need to be validated by knowing everybody else is having salmon sandwiches and walking the dog.
Plus, if it's one more password to remember or pin, I'm over it. Well, I mean, my brain can only hold so much.
Well, apparently Generation Z, which is anyone under 20, and I'm reliably told, doesn't rely on email. Email is too slow now. Everybody reacts and updates and communicates via their updates. So their Twitter updates, their Facebook page updates, that's how they tell people what they're doing, where they are, how they're feeling.
It's just
how many chocolate biscuits they had after work, whatever.
Who cares? Get on with it, guys. Focus exactly. on other things.
If you've got something important to say, that's all right, but you know.
But that's it. Unless it's important, get lost.
Exactly.
You've been listening to Hear Me Roar. I've been Sue.
I'm Kathy.
And I'm still Leanne.
Good evening.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.